Hello, and welcome to the Oscar Went To, the podcast that looks back at a year in film and sees what films endured, what films didn't, and attempts to figure out why. Please give it up for your masters of ceremony, Max Salim and Nick Mastad.
Wait, so you got boosted before it was cool to get boosted?
I got boosted before it was cool to get boosted, exactly. Do you remember, I actually called you on the way back from my my first shot, which was in Austria.
Yes, I do remember that.
A rather great distance to get to because it was like, it seemed like I was jumping the line by like months because I was in Europe. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to be like, I was going to get back and like everybody in the States was going to get vaccinated like 6 months after. So I thought I was like really getting a golden ticket. And... Yeah. Yeah, drove several hours, got the AstraZeneca shot.
I remember this, yes.
Became severely ill from the AstraZeneca shot. And then only to come back, only to not get my second one because the AstraZeneca had like a 3 month buffer.
Uh-huh.
And then I came back to the States. Everybody was already getting their shots here. And then I had to start over. So...
Oh,
because they didn't offer AstraZeneca in the States. Yeah. So I had to like start over with new shots because nobody even like recognized that shot. And so, yeah, I had my third shot in me like before it was hip to have your third shot. Also, when I got that first one, the reason I was willing to drive a great distance to get the first one was I thought this was my ticket to be done with the pandemic. It was still early enough, you know, that it was like, all right, you get this thing in your arm and we're done talking about this, which is exceedingly not the case.
No, I forget about the little pockets of like different, like absolutely massively different thinking that like have been throughout this pandemic. Cause Delta is back now, like in kind of like with like teeth in New York. And I like kind of forgot about even the word Delta. Like I was like, oh, Delta. Oh, I forgot about that, like that hiccup and things, like not even 2 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, is Alpha even a thing anymore? I thought everything was just Delta
or Omicron. Omicron is like all the buzz now, but
it's the new hottest variant.
It's so hot right now. It's the new swinging dick in the States.
We should just do a podcast where we talk about vaccines. It'd be huge.
I mean, we're at a time when that I think just can be done because it's truly like the top of every news feed.
We just do like a vaccine advice show, totally unqualified.
Yeah. All right, so just I mean, and again, as we preface every answer that we have, we are not licensed virologists, but we think you should just stay in. It's wild. People have been contacting me, like family and stuff, back in MN, being like, "So, how is everything out there?" And it's like reminding me a little bit of like, "Oh, that's right. Like New York as a news item is like crumbling under a virus."
Sounds familiar.
But then, like, yes. And then, but then it's like yesterday. It's like comedy shows and stuff have been canceled, and it's like, ooh, this is eerily reminiscent of March of 2020. But then yesterday, I did some Christmas shopping and I walked, I didn't take the subway. The subway to me is like the cesspool of all cesspools when it comes to like any sort of contagion.
So wait, why, like, dude? Like, because like millions of people move through them and there's absolutely no airflow and they all cram into tiny places.
Yes. It's all of the above. So I like walked into Manhattan and walked back, which I actually, it was a check double boxes because I truly didn't like leave my apartment the day before because it was the day after the booster and I was just like sluggish and like blah. So I like walked a lot yesterday into Manhattan, but I did some Christmas shopping and like looking at people and like walking past storefronts and restaurants and stuff. It's like you wouldn't know anything, and so it's like this weird balance or this weird. It's bringing back kind of like the height of the like the stress of like the what. We're getting information about what we should and should not be doing, and people are just blatantly disregarding it. I'm fairly stoked for this movie in that I have a lot of experience with this movie, but
well, yeah, I know it's good, you know, in the middle of these tough pandemic times to just watch some fucking Muppets.
Yeah, yeah, and it's been a while since I've watched one. So, okay, here's the, we'll get this underway. Hello and welcome to the Oscar Went To. This week, as a very special holiday episode, we are getting our scuba gear on and diving, kind of augering a hole into the ice and diving into the lake to do a deep dive on the 1992 hit slash cult hit slash holiday hit film Muppet Christmas Carol, directed by Brian Henson. I'm Nick.
I'm Max.
On this podcast, we like to look back at a year in film and decide what has aged well and what hasn't and try to figure out why. If that sounds interesting to you, then you're going to love this episode. That's a standalone holiday special, but feel free to dive back into our archive and explore any of the deep dive episodes, because that is what we do. In our recaps, we like to jump into the depths and take a closer look at some of the films that have piqued our interest from a given year. Quick disclaimer, our deep dive episodes are no holds barred, and we will absolutely be getting into spoiler territory. So if you haven't seen Muppet Christmas Carol,
or you've never interacted with the Christmas Carol as a story, a play, that's a concept better. At any that's point better. In your life,
yeah,
this might not be a good starting episode for you.
True. And that being said, the ideal way to listen to this, off the top of my head, is that if you is a listener who is familiar with A Christmas Carol but has never seen Muppet Christmas Carol, I think is like it would be a pretty great way to learn about it. So that being said, without further ado, deep dive holiday special episode, A Muppet Christmas Carol. I got to start with you, Mac. Well, here, I'm going to table set because that's what we normally do. And that to me is super interesting to do for a holiday movie, because I feel like holiday movies, maybe more than any other kind of movies, are like completely impervious to like Rotten Tomato scores or box office numbers and all this. They're just like, they exist in a vacuum of whether they're beloved by a culture or not. So, Muppet Christmas Carol was released on December 11th, 1992. On a budget of $12 million, it made $27.2 million, so a kind of a modest success. It currently holds, and it is fluctuating every day, a Rotten Tomatoes score of 76%, a Metacritic score of 64%, and IMDb holds it at 7.7 out of 10. Max, what was your first exposure to this movie? Did you grow up with it?
I mean, I've seen this movie several times. I don't have a clear-cut first viewing in my head of this film. Okay. It could have been in theaters, but I somehow don't think so.
Okay. Mine was pretty crystal clear. This was a movie I received as a Christmas gift from my great uncle, like in the mail. The mail part of that is completely irrelevant. But I got it like, you know, the year it came out on VHS as a Christmas present. So it was ingrained in the way that VHSs you own as a kid in the 90s were ingrained in you. So this is a good topic. Movies that we watch become holiday classics. Now, this is actually ringing a bell, no pun intended. It's a Wonderful Life, that I think we broached this topic last year in our holiday special episode of Home Alone. But it's like, I feel like we've, in our lifetime, have seen movies. We've been alive for their release and conscious during their release and have seen them become holiday classics. But hang on, before I get too far into this topic, this was a movie that we saw do that. I owned it as a new film, watched it as a kid a lot as a VHS, and then I would say in our college years started to become aware of like, oh, certain friends' families like watched this once a year at Christmas. And then like kind of since college years, circa 2007, 2008, now I feel like it is like a kind of inarguable, whether people like are super familiar with it or not, I feel like it is in the American holiday movie classic canon now. Would you agree with this?
Yes, I would agree with this. But and not top tier in my
I would viewing, I, okay.
In yeah, my yeah, opinion, yeah. You know.
Yes. I would agree with you there. Yeah.
B holiday, yeah.
B holiday American movie canon. Okay, that's fair. I agree with that, and but I would say like 10 years ago it wasn't in the canon. It was more like a cult holiday, like some families watch this. So I feel like I've gone for, and the experience of like watching a movie and being familiar with like the little nuances of the movie, of just like, you know, certain cadences of Michael Caine, you know, like harvest time for the moneylenders, ha, as an example, you like know a movie personally, and then you're like, oh, other people watched this movie growing up, and then to see it become a classic is kind of it's, I don't know, it's an interesting experience.
Well, I think what I would speculate that's happening with culture here, and that's what we do on the Oscar Went To, is that there's a lot of people like you who have this VHS, watched this movie a ton as a kid. Then when you're a kid, it's not always your decision completely what movies are being watched during the holiday. So maybe it ebbs and flows a little bit, plays more with certain families, a little bit less with other families. You go to college, you probably don't really watch The Muppets too much in your 4 years in college. But then as you leave
unless you're me.
And then as you leave college and you start kind of developing your own holiday traditions with friends or with your own family, now you are the tastemaker of your little world and pop this movie in more and more, symbolically pop the movie in. I guess we don't click on the movie. And I think that would be what I would guess is, you know, allows this movie to kind of bubble back up to the top, to the surface of holiday movie watching.
Yes, I think salient analysis of what has happened and is happening. I think, yeah, that's spot on. Because, I mean, if I had children, I mean, we're going to get into to feelings about this movie, but I think that's a really nice way of putting it. So let's just dive in. And this is the first any sort of Muppet movie that we've done on the Oscar Went To, which is of note, because this is it's subgenre.
Yeah, it's a pivotal moment. I think it was brought up in briefly, at least, though, in movies we can't wait to watch with our kids.
Oh, that's right. Well, I thought you had said Muppet Treasure Island.
Correct.
Yes, yes, yes. Which I don't have nearly as much of an affection for or associate, just like exposure to. Because that did stand out to me when you said that. I was like, oh, interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that. And I don't necessarily feel that. So that like stuck out to me. But the Muppets, like, I love the Muppets growing up. I like it was like Sesame Street. And then like, in college, I got super into like the Muppets as like a creation and like a thing. I guess that's just sort of the point. Anyway, when we did the Moulin Rouge episode, when you were on your hiatus, we did the Moulin Rouge episode. I had a kind of a single episode category, which was if the Muppets adapted this, which Muppet would play which role. And this reminded me watching this movie of how Moulin Rouge is a perfect movie to be adapted by the Muppets. Miss Piggy as Satine, Kermit as Ewan McGregor. But I'll stop there. So fave scenes and moments from Muppet Christmas Carol. Max, what do you got?
Fave scenes and moments from Muppet Christmas Carol.
I feel like I caught you off guard.
Look, this is, so I'm just going to give, and I think we'll dive into this, why this is a case a little bit. I like this movie. I like the Muppets. I have always liked the Muppets. But I have to say, and I did watch this most recent viewing in the middle of a 9-hour flight where I was not in that pleasant of a seat and kind of just like hunched over my laptop. So I admit it wasn't like the most pleasant viewing experience I've ever had for watching a movie. Sure. But I found with this particular viewing, the combination of the Muppets, but I think more at the fault of A Christmas Carol, just a story that has been adapted, taken to stage thousands of times, and just something that is like so, cooked into this part of the year, but also in a lot of ways has become cliched, in my opinion, or like lost its effectiveness through its incessant retelling, that I was a little bit bored watching this movie.
Yes.
I blame the Christmas Carol aspect more than the Muppets themselves, but I do think that, you know, we can get into that later. So this was a bit of a slog. I was kind of like, I can't wait for this to be over. Not because I hate this movie. I'll definitely show this to young Ted when he's old enough, but this was a bit of a painful viewing for me.
Totally understandable. I'll reveal my cards now. I don't love this movie. And to your point of it being a story that's been adapted to dust that like, oh yeah, like I know every single beat and subbeat of this story because I've seen it so many times. But Christmas Carol is a fucking melancholy story. Like it's not until the last 5 minutes of this story that there's any kind of shred of like joy in the story. Now, like in this adaptation of it, sure, the Muppets are very winsome as they always are. And there's some legit great jokes and like they are ingratiated in the story in a great way. And Gonzo and Rizzo, I think, are like perfect in perfectly used and like in many moments that are like they don't compromise like the story and they're perfectly Muppet. It's a really nice balance. But like there's no escaping how like just depressing the story is. It's like Dickensian London. This guy who's like completely joyless and these ghosts, man, like these ghosts in every adaptation. I tried watching the motion capture Robert Zemeckis, Jim Carrey, Christmas Carol, like a couple weeks ago and was reminded of like in that adaptation as well. Like the ghosts of Christmas present, past, present and yet to come are like, they're very unsettling to me. Like even the present who's like this joyful kind of jolly guy is like, bro, what's your like history? Like what are you doing? Like why are you just here? Like the Ghost of Christmas Past is like this very unsettling like specter that's just like, but I told you, blue doo 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 doo. And then there's this big guy who's like, I don't really listen to things. And then like the Yet to Come is literally the Grim Reaper. It's like, I mean, I get it. It's like a story with like a moral that's like universal and about the spirit of Christmas. Great. But to your point of like, we know this story. And secondly, it's like, especially for a kid's movie and especially for a Muppet movie, it's like, this is really dreary shit. And it's like all filthy and like everyone's kind of sad. And like, I kind of made this a point last year, but like Tiny Tim dying is like too fucking much. I remember as a kid watching this, there's basically, how about this? Let's say in a world where Christmas Carol isn't this beloved story, if Muppets came out with this movie, like in 1992, people would be like, what the fuck happened? Like it's not kid appropriate to like this, like Tiny Tim dying in this miser being like, oh my God, please. No, say it isn't. So it's like, it goes too hard by like a hundredfold. And like Tiny Tim dying, I remember as a kid watching it and they specific feeling in my stomach where it's like, oh. And honestly, what I've come to realize, I had this realized rewatching it last night. It is the same feeling as when Jasmine kissed Jafar in Aladdin, where it was just like, oh no, this is so wrong. It was like, it's like, I didn't know shit like got this bad.
Well, yeah, and we talk about Disney movies often on the show, and I laud them for being kids' movies, but always at one point for becoming a little bit too scary, a little bit too intense, a little bit too real. And
for the record, I absolutely applaud that as well.
And I think it's very like good thing to do in kids' movies, and it's like very like formative in a lot of ways. But when Tiny Tim dies, you're just at the end of your rope. You know, it's just been like nothing but yes. sadness and grime for the whole story. So it's like a little less, you know, like a little trough of emotion that then you like you escape from, but more you're just like beaten over the head with this fucked up, horrible London.
Yes. Yes, totally. I mean, it's like... And like we're not even introduced to Tiny Tim until, at least in this version, until like the third act. And so it's like, why the fuck? You're just like introducing like a child character who's paralyzed, who has an ailment, and then you kill him. I mean, this was a point I made last year, but it's just like, it's enough that he has a sick child. Like we get it. We feel for Bob Cratchit. He has a sick child. Like you don't need to, it's like, it's truly sadistic to just like have that, to kill that child. It's brutal.
But in Dickensian London, it's like, I think it's just a dark place. You know, I think Cratchit has a pretty great life. And as far as Dickens characters can go,
Okay, fair point. So there are adjustments to be made for, yeah, for like the Dickensian London. Yeah. Quality of life quality is of slightly life. Lower. Yeah. Okay.
Like Tiny Tim's saying, already lived like a full happy life in 17th but, okay, century London or whatever.
Yes, but okay, but like in the adaptations, let's make that adjustment then, because it's like the equivalent of like, you know, Snow White as a grim fairy tale was much darker. Sleeping Beauty as a grim fairy tale was much darker. Disney like kept the, you know, kind of perfectly calibrated amount of darkness, but they zhuzhed it up. It's like, let's do that for A Christmas Carol, people. Like it's like we just like stuck for whatever with this tale as like, no, we're gonna be as faithful as possible to this dark, dreary trench of life tale. Come hell or high water, like it especially for like and there's a Mickey Christmas Carol as well, which is like the cartoon from like the 80s that I caught on TV, I remember. And there's a goddamn scene where it's like Mickey, who plays Bob Cratchit, visiting the grave of Tiny Tim, and it's just like the Tiny Tim's little crutch like up against the grave, and Mickey like in mourning. It's like Mickey wasn't drawn as a cartoon character. He was not designed to experience grief that explicit. Like you
to
can
bend
see
over the grave of his
yes!
child.
He's meant to like hop and like be curious and surprised, and like to watch him like have a single tear like stream down Mickey's face. Like he wasn't designed for this, people. Read the room. I'm not saying Christmas Carol is devoid. It has a very valid, great Christmas specific moral to it that is positive to the world. We don't need to be this faithful to Dickens' tale. It's high time we put that out.
Yeah, I think maybe you're onto something, that I just don't like Christmas Carol, you know? Like,
yes, I watching it this time, I it was like a kind of a light bulb for me.
And the pacing of Christmas Carol in general. Now, I've never read the book. I'm sure the book is like, what, like 600 pages?
No, it's a novella. It's really short.
It's a novella. It's really short.
I've never read it.
Okay. Yeah. And maybe the pacing is better in the book, but yeah, it's just something about this story is just, it's just off-putting. And like, you're right. You go through just a grim slog for too high percent of the movie to only be paid off in the last 7 minutes of this happiness. So,
yeah. Absolutely. I will say Michael Caine is great in this movie. I lose sight that we're watching Michael Caine, partly because it's at an era when, like, you know, early 90s Michael Caine, I can't think of what he's doing. I feel like he was like an absolute heartthrob British actor in the 60s, 70s. I guess he was in like Hannah and Her Sisters and stuff, but I'm not familiar with like his like mid career stuff. And he's so beloved and prestigious now, and has been kind of for our entire like, you know, basically since we've been like 20. That I found here, I was like, oh, I like forget that I'm watching Michael Caine, and he's like committed, and he is Scrooge for better or worse. And like I really admired his performance and commitment, especially.
That he was acting completely with puppets the entire time?
Yes, there were a couple times when I was just like kind of like, you know, like zoomed out a little bit and was like, wait, he's talking to, you know, Dr. Bunsen, Honeydew, and Beaker, who are being puppeteered just below the frame, and he's like completely committed. I mean, like, but I'm not
that's
disparaging.
That's acting right there, dude.
It absolutely
you
is.
You could take
and
a
it's
note
like,
from that performance.
And I do. Hey, I've seen a lot of the original Muppet Show is on Disney Plus and has been since like the spring. And for any listeners who haven't at least gotten their feet wet with that, I highly recommend it. You can kind of just like spin the wheel of their episodes and just click on one, and you can't really go wrong. But like, it's like, I love the Muppets. I mean, the Muppets are a singular, like, I can't think of another entity like the Muppets where it's like they're straight up puppets, which like have kind of a stigma against them, I feel like, in like contemporary entertainment, is like, if they're not like for preschoolers, they're like very lowbrow, like very cheap, almost like vaudevillian level, like unsophisticated fare. And like Muppets are like, if someone doesn't like the Muppets, it's fair to say they're just like, well, Scrooge. I mean, they are like pretty singularly, come on, man, like, do you have no heart? And so like the Muppets are like, they're incredible. I mean, like the fact that like they're all like individual characters and like adults, children like them. I mean, they're like Peanuts is like the closest equivalent I can maybe think of something that is like culturally and like across generations, like everyone loves the Muppets.
Sure. I mean, what I like about the Muppets, and that's probably like the saving grace of this movie, that Muppets, in my opinion, are sort of like endlessly watchable. They're so tangible. You know, you can like, you know exactly what's going on. You can tell, you can even like see like the foam and like the material that's like used in them, but still through the puppeteering, and like, you know that this is like an actor's fucking like hand in Kermit's face, basically.
Yes. Yes.
But through the puppeteering, like they can still evoke emotion, even though Kermit's eyes literally don't move, you know, and like it's insane how much emotion can be conveyed through Kermit's crumpled face and his voice.
Yes. Okay. I'm having thoughts now that I'm just going to say because I don't want to lose them. I think an element that would save this movie is because like Muppet Show and Muppets in general, like the original like Muppet movie and A Great Muppet Caper, and maybe a little bit even later with like the reboots of like the Muppets and what was the second reboot Muppets movie called? Muppets Most Wanted, which I actually didn't see. But what I'm saying is what would save a Muppet Christmas Carol or really like amplify it and kind of give it the Muppet energy is if, because this is the Muppets putting on a production of a Christmas Carol. That's what we're seeing. But we don't see any, there's no meta-ness to this movie. I mean, there's a little bit, I guess, with Gonzo and Rizzo when he's like, I'm Charles Dickens. He's like, you are, blah, 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 you know. But like, it's just, it's very sparing. Muppets have always been meta. They are always like, you're always watching a movie that they're making and they know they're making and people are missing their cues and Kermit's trying to keep everything together. This movie would totally benefit from, we see the edges of this production. We see maybe a spotlight fall. We see Fozzie out of costume or struggling to like put on the beard. We need to see the behind the scenes or some implication that this is the Muppets putting on a production. Michael Caine as Scrooge as a character never breaks, is you know, that all the Muppets have is on this shit. But we need to see the production, you know, and at the end we get that like kind of pan out and we see like the spotlights and the cameras and stuff. That's what the Muppets are, and that's what this movie is missing, and that's the joyless quality that I feel like this movie is kind of pinpointed
on. Great point. Yeah. Like there are some jokes woven into it, but not in the like just in like the slapstick Muppet way, but not in like the more clever, self-aware Muppet way.
Yes. Right. And it's also like Fozzie, to me, for all intents and purposes, is not in this movie. I mean, like he doesn't show up until like 45 minutes into it, and then he's like in it for 5 minutes. Like Fozzie isn't in this movie, and it's like Fozzie's great. Like Fozzie is a top three Muppet. He's like, I mean, he's second in command to Kermit. It's like we need to find a way to get Fozzie in this, and Miss Piggy too. I'm not a big Miss Piggy fan.
Who is
controversial? But she's barely in this movie, and you know, it's like we see her as Bob Cratchit's wife. We also need to see her putting on a you know, having a fit that her role isn't big enough. Like that's what we need to see, and that's what we're missing. And that kind of is like ad infinitum for this whole movie. And also it's just like, it's just levity. We just need levity for this grim, grim tale of death and tragedy. Okay.
Did I tell you I almost named my kid Ebenezer?
Come here, Ebzy.
How many people do you think are named Ebenezer? More or less than Adolf in the world right now?
There are less people named Ebenezer than there are Adolf. Because Adolf, I feel like, I would imagine in Germany has is still a name somewhat. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. Well, do you know there's a book? I know in Austria there's a book. Did you know this? There's a
Mein
book. No. Yes, Mein Kampf, which we'll be reviewing on our book club episode after Crossroads. There's a book with all of the names you are allowed to name your kid.
In Germany.
In Austria.
In Austria.
And I'm guessing in Germany, which is a bizarre concept. Because like if you're an immigrant and you want to name your kid something that's not in the book, like you know, an Arabic name or an Asian name that are surely not in the book, it needs to be petitioned like through some public service place. So you can't just name your kid a river, you know, for example, if you want to.
Wow.
And I'm pretty sure that Adolf is not in the book anymore. Like Adolf has been removed from the book.
I mean, this sounds kind of dictatorship.
Oh yeah, dude. Oh yeah. As Americans, as I don't want to pinpoint Austrians, but as people in this part of the world, I'm shocked how accepting they are of this reality.
Yeah. It's an old practice.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So you need to like pick a name from a predetermined set of names. But us Americans, we're like, I had a very similar reaction to you. You know, because we're about fucking freedom here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I want to name my kid Adolf.
But
wow.
I don't know if Ebenezer's in there either.
Ebenezer. I mean, do they? Yeah. I mean, okay. Obviously they don't have like, if it's not in the book, it's not in the book. I just want like the names that I want the book of like, here's what I want. A book that of names you cannot name your child and the reason why. And it can be as simple as like Ebenezer dash antiquated
dash
cobwebby
antagonist in Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yeah. Connotation of miserliness. Wild. We also in this movie get the piggy kids and like the froggy kids, because Tiny Tim is played by a Muppet, kind of a canon Muppet who's named Robin, and we see Robin throughout Muppet adaptations and incarnations. We never see that other frog kid, and I don't think we've ever seen like the other little piggy kids.
I know. I was thinking it would have been an interesting move if they mix the genes of a frog and a pig, so their kids were like these like mixed mythical creatures.
Probably
off-putting too.
Off-putting for sure, because the first thing I'm thinking of is like pigs that have Kermit's eyes and Kermit's like distinct pupils that are kind of like the circles with the dashes through them. There is a funny joke in Great Muppet Caper that's like there's a photo of it's like a Kermit-ized version of Fozzie, and it is like off-putting and weird. It's like Fozzie's green with Kermit eyes and has like the triangular Kermit neck thing, and it's like, oh, okay, I don't need to see that again.
Scary.
Like, it is scary. Also, before we move on from the topic, I just a kind of a missed joke that I'm surprised we haven't seen in a Muppet adaptation of is someone calling Mrs. Piggy, excuse me, Mrs. the Frog, nay, Piggy, I think would be pretty rich. Also, I do love the runner of that I forgot about of Gonzo and Rizzo being mercilessly kind of thrown off of windowsills high up from people opening windows. I could have had that like two or three more times. Like I really enjoyed that.
But how about the darkness when Rizzo falls into the bucket of ice and is like, are you going to help that dude? Like that's probably like pretty cold.
Yes.
And then we don't see him again. Right. He just like bubbles under the water.
Froze to death.
Yeah.
Froze to death. Yeah. We did need to see a Muppet, like kind of like, who's been amputated or had gangrene and like needed to be amputated and was like suffering. Cause I mean, it's like, why are we drawing the line there for being this faithful, you know, might as well like have the Muppets have antiquated ailments like rubella and scarlet fever and stuff.
I know I'm not really sharp at the moment because I feel like that's my kind of joke right now. And I'm just like, I'm not snapping.
No, I hear you.
Contributing, I hear you right now. I'm disappointed in myself because I like making fun of old timey London. Definitely. Locked in. I'm sorry.
Here's a specific moment when he uses. Okay. Here's a thing, because this was a VHS I owned watching this movie last night. I was reminded of the specific situation of when you have a movie you're familiar with as a kid, of that situation of you pop it in. I was so familiar with the first I'm so familiar with the first third of this movie, not nearly as familiar with the second act, barely know the last third of this movie. And just like that result of like as a kid being like, yeah, I popped this in a million times, watched the first half hour, got distracted or busy, left it, rewound, started from the beginning.
Crushed. Yeah, got emotionally crushed.
No, and that's what it is. I realize I always, once they get to the schoolhouse in the Ghost of Christmas Past, that's when I turn this movie off, because that's when it gets bleak as hell. You get like the like melancholy of like nostalgia. He's like, I know this chalkboard like the back of my hand. And then like, okay, and this is where worth talking about. This is a fascinating talking point. So in the version that I have, and this is kind of a known thing, in the movie, so when they go to Christmas Past and he like when they get to the part of like kind of his early 20s, early career, and he has that love of his life, I forget her name. Also, they don't do her character justice at all. She's like, she's really annoying and I found off-putting. Like, they need to do something with the character. When they cut to like him and her on like Christmas Eve on that hilltop, and he's like, she's like a year away from our engagement. He's like, well, plenty of time, you know, all that. In this version, obviously, it's just a succinct scene. In the original version, the version that I have, in the theatrical version, and for a long time, there was a whole song exchange between the two of them there, a long song exchange between the two of them there. That is, I mean, I'm so glad that they deleted that from like recent versions, because it is truly like, it's like if you weren't disengaged with the movie by like the melancholy nostalgia, it's like the Muppetless, sad, white toned, like gray aesthetic song that's like 5 minutes between two adults about how like it's a lost love that made you turn off the VHS. Wild that existed. Worth noting, he passed away in May of 1990. And so this is, I believe, the first production. So Disney, or Buena Vista, which was like a Disney like subsidiary, I don't know, bought Muppets in like the late 80s, and Jim Henson was alive, and this was a very promising partnership, synergy, etc. This like allowed for like the Muppet Muppets 3D at MGM Studios, or now Disney Hollywood Studios at Disney World. Great ride if you haven't, or great amusement experience if you haven't experienced it. Love it. Jim Henson unexpectedly passes away in 1990, I think of the flu or complications of pneumonia, something like this.
Wait, is this from Christmas Carol?
I mean, might as well be. Okay. And so basically what we have is this like huge, like we're set up for just like, oh my God, like the Muppets, who are already beloved, like are now partner. Jim Henson's at the helm of the Muppets. Like he's like, you know, his own sort of Disney with his creations. Like this is going to be great. And then it's just like, it just fizzles really sadly. Muppet Christmas Carol is the first movie made under, once Buena Vista has purchased the Muppets. It's directed by Brian Henson, Jim Henson's son. God bless. But it is worth noting, and I think maybe explains some of the trepidation and lack of risk and some of the befuddling, punishing, depressing qualities of this movie, that like it is a very safe adaptation. It is a very safe movie. It's the first time that the Muppet movie feature films up until this point have been original. It's a Muppet movie, Great Muppet Caper, Muppets Take Manhattan. This is where we get like, we start getting the Muppet adaptations. After this, we get Muppet Treasure Island in 95. There are a couple TV movies that are adaptations of like Wizard of Oz and stuff. This is kind of a down, what's I think in hindsight regarded as like a down period for the Muppets. And I think it is, because they've lost the creative visionary that created them and had steered the ship up until this point. So, you know, like my heart goes out for sure. Like, and I will say the production quality of this is very high. Like when they're above, when the opening shot of this, like over Dickensian London with all the rooftops and stuff.
This is my favorite part of the movie. And unfortunately it happens in the first minute and then gets all downhill from there. But the production design in this movie is excellent.
Yes.
And the scale of it is like massive, and the details are great, and it's like this kind of like weird kind of bending between you know, this Muppet world and more of like a Les Mis, like dark, dreary world that whoever the production designer, my MVP, I don't know his or her name, they really, really nail it.
Yes. I really love that. And I would say that the opening shot, like the opening and panning through, like when they're panning through and like even the, like when they're singing the song about Scrooge, every detail of it is so good. Like the jokes are so well paced in the song, the reveals, the pans, everything. And like the production design is really insane. I mean, it is like you are in a kind of endless Dickensian London, and it like, it's extremely, the dreariness is extremely intentional, and they do nail it. And like, yeah, above the rooftops like that, it's like endless. It's really impressive to this day.
One thing I was going to say about Scrooge, old Ebenezer, is that something I don't like about his character is like, mm-hmm. okay, so he's like married to work. He's devoted to his work.
Yep.
Right. And that's why he's like, his life has taken these turns and he's arrived to this curmudgeon place. But like, he's a fucking mortgage broker, you know? It's yeah. like such, it's like how, and no, nothing against mortgage brokers, but I imagine that it's like you go in, you do your 40 hours a week, you don't think about it afterwards, and like you live a pretty okay life. And that's the trade-off. And it just seems like such a crappy thing to be so passionate about, that he's like, he's given up all the relationships in his life to focus on, yeah, fucking collecting mortgage.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I will say, so unpacking Scrooge for a sec, because like my initial reaction to that is like, it's less about the job itself that he has being demanding of his time. And it's more so about, it's just the fact that his character is like, he could be doing anything, but he disappears into his work as a way of cutting himself off from love and from life and from people. So he could really be doing anything, and like he uses work as a mechanism. Like he will find a way for it to consume all of his time, because it's a barrier to like, it's a protection from life. But here's the thing, and I don't know, I'm trying to think back on other adaptations of this, because like when we see the earliest version of him in school, he's like that. I mean, he's maybe softer around the edges, but he is like, no, I must do my schoolwork. Christmas, bah. Like even as like an 8-year-old, he's doing this, which I was like, wait a second, why is he like this? And then it's like, so it's like by the time like he gets to like his early 20s, he's still like that. There's no explanation, at least in this adaptation, of like why he be like. So my guess is that like, okay, I think in other adaptations, him and his business partner, Jacob Marley, Scrooge was happier and like a little more, he was softer on the edges. And then Marley's death kind of closed him off and hardened him to life. And okay. That's what kind of was the nail in the coffin, no pun intended, for his like being shut off. But like in this version, like none of that really matters. Like you don't really, Marley's death, I think, rightfully is kind of underplayed, and like you don't understand that Marley, I mean Marley was dead to begin with, yes, but you don't really get into like, oh, his business partner died.
Sure. I think that's a good point, and it's something that's not working in this adaptation, and that would fix my issue with it. But also just like, if he did something that was more fathomable to be passionate about, you know, like there's only like how much, there's only so much work you can't work on fucking Christmas as a mortgage broker. Like there's only so much work to do. Where is he still finding work to be done? You know, and maybe if he was like a carpenter or like, I don't know, something that you could like visually see the endless amount of work he could focus on. You would like he'd be fleshed out more as a character. But as it stands now, it's like, what are you going to fucking do on Christmas? Like look at your like handwritten spreadsheets. Longer,
you
evict more people.
You're inadvertently doing a very funny bit as a Scrooge employee right now. like you're not Bob Cratchit, because Bob Cratchit has like, you know, it's like two kind of, but like you being like flummoxed as like, what work are we even going to be doing tomorrow? We're going to get 1 hour off. What the hell are you talking about? You're insane. Where's HR? Like absolutely. I mean, I think it goes, I mean, I hear you. I think it goes back to like Scrooge could be doing anything. It's like he's just using work as an excuse to hide from the world. And also I think mortgage broker is like a particularly nice, like, oh, this also is a profession that is at its worst used against people and devoid of compassion. So it just like brings out that
and piece boring.
Of his character. And boring. Just scribbling.
Do you think there's any mortgage broker listeners we have? Write us if you're out there.
Yeah, write us with a quill and
a
parchment.
Rebuttal. Yeah. Write us rebuttal. To the unfair takes we've just had on mortgage brokers.
Change our mind. Come on, please. We're all ears. Change our mind. Brilliant. I'm going to move on. I mean, I really like the kind of nebulous sort of category shifting that we've.
Yeah.
I really like this. Speaking of American freedom, I'm going to go. I have a splitting hairs. I forget that this movie is a musical, despite being familiar with it over a 30-year period of time. And I will say, it's a musical to musical is a case-by-case basis. For this, any song that is not the opening song, which is great, and it's not the ending song, which is fine. We don't need any of the other songs in this movie. Anytime a song starts, I'm like, oh.
Well, it's not a good music. I like musicals.
I love musicals.
I'm a big musical guy.
Me too.
I
want to be clear.
Yeah. I don't think this is a particularly good musical. And yes, besides the first song, I can't even really remember any of the songs, but I also think you might blow your fucking brains out, you know, if they just like played this. It's already played so straight that, and you know, we'd say we want a little levity, that maybe the music, you know, gives us that a little bit, albeit not very well, but I think you pull that out and it's just like, it's too dark. I mean, it's already too dark. We've come to the conclusion, but
that's a good point. That's a good point. I hadn't thought about the levity. I had the idea, as I was taking notes last night watching this, I was like, oh, I'm going to have just like a ranking of the songs in this movie. And then I got too bored by them to do it. So that's the ranking.
You like fell asleep with like your notebook and your pen out. You woke up. sitting up in a rocking chair.
Yeah, I did watch this in Scrooge cosplay. I was in my nightgown and had a candle and a bit of cheese.
I like the gown a lot. I have that in my notes. I want the robe.
If I wasn't talking to you on my phone right now, I would literally show you a tab that I've had open on my in my Chrome that it's nightgown Scrooge costumes because I just want one and I think it would be a great shopping cart
for 2 years.
Yes. My items you might also like for like across all social media platforms have been Scrooge gowns. I think it'd just be a great gag to show up completely unannounced, like to be at home on Christmas morning, but just like not have mentioned it and show up Christmas morning, come out of the basement or come out of the guest room and just be in full Scrooge cosplay. I think would just
in
be
character
make me
too.
Laugh. Yeah. Oh, bah, humbug. We need to log into work today.
What's your double feature?
Okay. So this I've been waiting and excited to talk about all episode. So I need to shout out Eli Mandel, who we had on our Dumb and Dumber episode, close friend, and Muppet expert. He turned me on to a Muppet Christmas movie a couple years ago that I had hitherto never heard of. And it's only available on YouTube, but it's available in full and fairly decent quality on YouTube. And it's a 1987 television special called A Muppet Family Christmas. Write this down, people. A Muppet Family Christmas. It is about 47 minutes. This is 87. So this is, I think this is after or right before the Buena Vista Henson deal. Henson is alive. Henson's at the helm. But you can disregard that. I don't want to be a Muppet purist and be like, because I know that, therefore it's superior. I didn't know that watching it. And I watched this last night after I watched Christmas Carol because it reminded me of that. And I had never seen it, this Muppet Family Christmas in full. It is everything we're talking about, what a Muppet Christmas special should be. And it's just done perfectly. It's like, basically as a double feature, watch Muppet Christmas Carol first and then watch, pull up on YouTube and watch A Muppet Family Christmas. And it's the sweet to the bitter that is, Muppet Christmas Carol. Muppet Family Christmas in a nutshell, log line, Fozzie and all the Muppets are driving to Fozzie's mom's house for Christmas. They're going to surprise Fozzie's mom by staying with her for Christmas. Fozzie's mom erstwhile has is about to head to the airport to go to Malibu for a nice, like, kind of tropical Christmas. Muppets show up, Fozzie, her son, and all of his Muppets friends show up, and chaos ensues. Why this is superior, other than the great joke writing, the Muppets being the Muppets full-fledged for 47 minutes in a Christmas context, it is a crossover. All the Sesame Street Muppets show up. Fraggle Rock is in it. I don't really have much familiarity with Fraggle Rock, but they're in it and they're very cute. It's great. And it ends with like probably 15 minutes of all of these Muppets packed into a cozy living room with a crackling fire singing Christmas carols. The jokes are top notch. The characters are all like spinning plates and doing their thing in and out. Please, people, see A Muppet Family Christmas. It is superior to Muppet Christmas Carol. And I will say this brings up a better, interesting point, which is this speaks to, this came out in 87. Little seen. It's not available on Disney Plus, which is the current platform that all Muppet property IP is on. Muppet Christmas Carol being the kind of synonymous Christmas classic that has to do with the Muppets is completely to do with what is available to us, which has to do with money, which has to do with release, which has to do with production. Muppet Christmas Carol is a, God bless it, I feel for it. It is an inferior holiday Muppet product to A Muppet Family Christmas. The only reason it's synonymous and ubiquitous is because of availability. They make them, and it doesn't stand a chance. I mean, by this time, the nostalgia has been, the seeds of nostalgia have been planted, and those roots run deep. Those oaks are strong. But what I'm saying humbly is, give Muppet Family Christmas a chance, and it is the opposite of bleak that A Muppet Christmas Carol so stubbornly is. So that's my piece. That's my soapbox.
All right. Shit. I'll have to watch it. Why didn't we watch that?
I mean, I did. I inadvertently, like, after doing Christmas Carol, I'm like, oh yeah, what's that other one? And I watched it, and it's just, it's fucking winsome as hell, and Jim Henson has a cameo in it. It's truly, like, I teared up a couple times, and I know that's, like, probably off-putting and kind of insufferable, but it was just, like, what the Muppets are reminded me of that, of, like, oh yeah, I remember I grew up with these, and Big Bird, and The Count, and Fozzie, and Ralph, and... Is Ralph in this movie, the dog? He's in the Fozzie wig scene, maybe.
I don't know.
I didn't see Ralph. Fuck, man.
This movie sucks. Again,
it does, and... Ugh. Again, I feel for it. I feel for the context in which it was made. I understand why people are attached to it, but people, we need to take our heads out of the sand. It's not a good movie. It's just what... It's the only thing we got. We need... And there's more out there. Okay.
You said it.
Max, I'm looking over my notes to see if I missed anything.
Yeah, my note. Usually, like, I write, you know, I watch the movie, and then maybe 30 minutes before you and I get on the phone, I just start kind of like typing out my thoughts. And the culmination of that is usually like, you know, several paragraphs of writing, mm-hmm. kind of a thought dump. My Muppet Christmas Carol notes are, can't believe how much emotion they get out of Kermit. Art design... Art design is good. Great, yeah. Great robe. That's it.
Great robe is not wrong. And I like the first note of, like, I can't believe how much motion they get out of Kermit's eyes is a nice little microcosm of, like, how amazing, like, the phenomenon of puppeteering and Muppets in particular is. It's incredible.
It is incredible. You, I know you spoke for like 30 minutes about your double feature, but can I say my double feature?
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I partially that was just me being inconsiderate, and partially that was me. I feel like the double feature category has started to become like teed up as like a me thing.
That's true. I've been lacking in double feature.
No. But I apologize.
It's my favorite deep dive category. I got to do better.
Yes,
with it.
It is really, it's really fun. Okay, Max, what do you got for a double feature?
So I'm going to go in a similar direction. Also tangible creation. Also a bit bleak, but I'm going to go with A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Ooh, nice. That is a nice, that's sharing the bleakness. Yeah, yeah, I like that. Yeah.
So, and also something I haven't seen in years, and I was like 30 minutes in the Muppet Christmas Carol. I was like, fuck, we should have done Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, I don't even think about that as a Christmas movie.
It's
that
true.
Would be good.
Maybe it's a more of a Halloween movie.
That's what's fun about it. Yeah. But that's really interesting because it has both. It is, I think, more of a Halloween movie, but it is a Christmas movie. And, oh, man, that's another good one. We should do that next year. Because that's another movie that we watched go from initial release, and we watched it. That's a unique one because it is like we watched it become sort of like this, like, oh, we called it. It was like, oh, there's like kind of a, it's having like a second wave of like passion for it when we were in college. But that movie is teed up as a Halloween movie. It's like marketed as like a Halloween cult movie now. But you're right. It is also a Christmas movie. But again, marketing wise, I think we've fallen under the the spell of marketing for that movie. I love that. Okay. One last talking point that is, it's just kind of brain candy is, what is this, the definitive adaptation of A Christmas Carol? And before you answer, if you answer no, what is?
I guess it is. I don't know. When I think of A Christmas Carol, I think of just like high school plays, local theater. Like I think of it on stage.
Guthrie.
I think of it on stage incessantly this time of year across several different, you know, age and quality and talent levels of theater. Mm-hmm. So I guess I don't think about it as a movie, but it makes sense. Why would you ever fucking go watch this movie? Jesus Christ. Unless it's like a new adaptation where like Scrooge is a fucking like hard money lender. I was thinking that would be cool.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
And he like goes and breaks legs and shit like that. You know?
Yeah. Well, I've never seen Scrooged in full. I think although that's from like late 80s, I feel like that is in the vein of what you're talking about where they like kind of modernize it, which is kind of fun.
I've not seen that either.
I think as absurd slightly as it is to say, is this the definitive adaptation of A Christmas Carol? I think objectively you can say no, but I think talking about our generation at least, and if definitive is represented by level of familiarity that a generation has with an adaptation, I think this is yes, because there isn't enough. I mean, like,
I won't argue, dude.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But to your point, it is, it's like truly, it's just like every Christmas holiday season, it's a fire hose of adaptations of this story on stage. It's available in every tier of theater, Christmas specials, everything. And it's like, no, we need to put this to rest. It's okay. Christmas Carol as a story, it's gotten the love. We are truly, this isn't Romeo and Juliet. This isn't Shakespeare. It's run its course.
I completely agree. We need to put this to bed as a society.
Yes.
Okay.
Truly.
We might as well watch like fucking Tale of Two Cities every Christmas or something. Like,
yes. Yes. It needs to be put to bed. And like, it's truly Christmas Carol, and specifically Muppet Christmas Carol, is less of it being a classic is less of a reflection of its quality and more a reflection of a scarcity of something better. And that's my final.
You said
that's
it.
My final
mic
thought.
Drop.
That's my final.
It's been real.
My final thought.
All right.
All right, Max, this has been a pleasure. This was very fruitful.
We love the Muppets. We don't like
we
this
love
movie.
The no.
Christmas Carol needs to be put to rest. You need to see
put
it
to
one
rest.
Time when you're like 9 years old so it can like, you know, haunt and scar you, and then we're done with it moving
yes.
forward.
Let's watch a Muppet Family Christmas. Let's watch It's a Wonderful Life. We'll get the vibes that Christmas Carol, at least a Muppet Christmas Carol, aspires to but doesn't achieve. God bless us, everyone. Max, happy holidays.
Happy holidays, dude.
We'll be seeing each other hopefully in person.
In the flesh.
In the flesh.
Is it the first time since we recorded the first episode? Is that the last time I've seen you in person?
Wow. That might have been, save for maybe when we handed off the equipment. No, I don't know.
I don't think that might have been.
Yeah. Wow.
Well,
that's
we'll think
crazy.
About it. Yeah. Maybe we'll even do a episode together.
I like that.
Crazy.
In person. Well, happy holidays. Happy holidays to all listeners. And as always, thank you so much for listening. We so appreciate you. Please hit the subscribe button on your podcast player if you have a moment. And if you enjoyed the show, leave us a good review. It would mean a lot. We'd love to hear from you. If you agree with us, disagree with us, or have your own hot takes on Muppet Christmas Carol or any movie that you heard us review, send us an email or a voice memo at theoscarwent2@gmail.com. And if we think you're onto something, we may play it and react to it on an upcoming episode. Max, happy holidays.
Happy holidays, dude. Safe travels, everyone.
Safe travels, everyone. Don't be a Scrooge. We'll see you in the new year. Maybe slightly before.
Maybe slightly before. We'll see.
All right. Until then, God bless us, everyone.
Oh, yeah.